This is the Faith Debate, a theological roundtable gabfest with the Mixed Master as the master of ceremonies and the notorious Triple B, the big bridge builder. Can we build it? Yes, we can. The Faith Debate is a free-for-all forum.
Hoo-ah!
Where faith community leaders wrestle over the truth.
Yabba-dabba-doo.
In less than 30 minutes, learn more about what really matters than others learn in a month.
Ooh, how convenient.
Are you ready for a clash of ideas? Are you ready for the sound of freedom?
Let's get ready to rumble!
Let's get ready to rumble.
Ah, yeah!
In this corner, weighing in with a Master of Divinity from Reformed Theological Seminary, the Faith Debate Master of Ceremonies, Troy Skinner.
Got a moron here, is that it?
And in this corner, weighing in as a pastor, teacher, and founder of Bridges, connecting needs and resources in the local community.
Ooh, mama.
The notorious big bridge builder, John Switzer.
Now, I'm just getting warmed up.
Tomism. Or do you prefer Tomism? What is it? Is it only heady stuff for theological scholars, or can we all get a grasp of it? Does Thomas Aquinas help us to philosophically prove the existence of God? Well, ready to dive in and learn about form and matter, form without matter, act, potency, pure act, four causes of material, formal, efficient, and final. Oh boy! Sounds fun!
That is crazy.
Here to talk about this carnival of juicy topics are John Switzer. You just heard his voice a second ago. He's the founder of Bridges, connecting needs and resources in Frederick County. And Hayden Booth. He's never heard the show before, which explains why he showed up today. He's a layman of the Roman Catholic Church, a Thomist. Well, we're going to talk about that in just a second. And lover of Christ. Welcome to the show.
Very nice. So
let's start. We're going to talk about Thomas Aquinas and who he is and all. But let's start with his name. You know, tomato, tomato, potato, potato, all that sort of thing. I've usually heard it as Thomas Aquinas, and I've heard it as Thomism. Mm-hmm. But right before the show, you mentioned that some people don't say Aquinas. They say, what'd you say, Aquinius?
You could say Aquinas. You could say Aquinas.
Aquinas.
And the reason why is because he grew up where? You just told us this a second ago.
Aquino, Italy. Yeah, so it's actually not his surname. It's just... Back in the day, they used to,
call right. him Thomas of Aquino.
Correct.
So we shouldn't call him Aquinas, because it's like Leonardo is not to be called Da Vinci, because he's Leonardo, Da Vinci's not his name, it's just where he's from.
Of Vinci?
That'd be like calling Jesus Nazareth, right?
Well, they do call him the Nazarene.
They do.
Right? But we could call you Frederick, Troy of Frederick.
So you're going to call me Frederick now?
I am.
No, that's better than what you usually call me, so I'll take it. All right, and that the Thomism, Thomism. I heard you right before we went on. You said Thomism, but I've always heard it as Thomism. So is that just a matter of preference, too? Or have I been saying it wrong and hanging out with a bunch of lugheads all these years?
Is that like a Protestant Catholic distinction, possibly?
I have only ever heard Thomism, but
I
think that both could probably be
And you've be only understood. You've only ever heard it as Thomism? Because I've ever... Only heard Thomism, but I don't know that I've had extensive, experience of just grappling with Thomism. And so that could be just not having enough opportunity to be with it. Thomas Aquinas.
Yes. Tommy to his friends.
Tommy.
Yeah. So for some reason, we've got a bit of a hum in one of the microphones. So, dear listener, I apologize. I'll do my best to try to ride gain a little bit so that when Hayden is not speaking, I'll pull his mic down a little bit so that hum's not quite so prominent. I'm not sure what's going on with that. There's a short. We only have the very best equipment here at the Faith Debate Studios, let me tell you. If you only know what they pay me for doing this show. All right. So, now... Yeah, John's trying to be Mr. Fix-It. A shout-out. I know we're getting off to kind of a rambling start here.
Okay,
We answered the question, how many guys did it take to change a light bulb earlier?
It took two.
Or four.
There were four people there.
Right. There was... There was one, you, putting the light bulb in.
Yeah.
There was me hoping to hold the little screws that go into place and pointing out the need to change the light bulb. Yeah. So we had critical roles in this. But we had Hayden there as a witness.
We are totally distracted this morning.
And then Laura, who sometimes you hear do news here on WFMD, she was there as the foreman. And what did she say? Moral support or moral emotional support? Something
yeah.
like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it took four.
It took four. So how many of us does it take to describe Tomism?
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking that Hayden might know a little bit more about this than I do. So why don't you...
Wait, can we just describe Hayden like somewhere along the way you and I were talking about... This is like a little bit of a Catholic Protestant thing between he and I. Hayden hasn't always... been Catholic, though his mom was Catholic. Now I'm telling your story. Sorry. But as we had the discussion, he and I have grappled with like the role of scripture and how trustworthy is scripture as opposed to human reason. And in the context of those discussions, which were always, I felt, and you know, you'll have to answer for yourself, but I always felt like they were really rigorous between us. Like we'd dig into some really challenging, you know, one another's perspectives and what was right or not. And so after college, you started reading this book by Fazer. Tell us a little bit about like how'd you get connected to the book?
Sure. So I was initially brought back into Christian faith through C.S. Lewis, as so many people are, Mere Christianity. And that tickled my intellectual sense for a little bit. And it kind of tapered off once you get accustomed to the argument and you're yearning for something more. And I was turned on to the thought of Thomas Aquinas, and I heard about this guy Edward Fazer, who had written this book. It's basically Aquinas for beginners. Started reading it, fell in love with Aquinas' thought, and that's pretty much all she wrote.
And what was it about Aquinas' thought that you're like, wow, that's really amazing?
There is, I think, a tendency, especially for people in my generation, to think that Christians are sort of anti-intellectual, or there's, you know, we just are subject to the God of the gaps, and we just have to constantly be shrinking back and just relying on just faith alone to get us to some kind of understanding of God. And it felt good to know that our reason could get us there, at least, you know.
Yeah, and so it was the fact that he didn't just have answers, but he had like robust answers that could speak to a lot of the, this uses gaps differently. You just talk about God of the gaps, but there's kind of a atheism of the gaps, or there's gaps in atheistic philosophy that are pretty perennial in philosophers of the day in terms of not being able to find a reason, you know, to live at the end of the day, and struggling to, you know, just common sense, put A plus B equals C, you know, into a logical construct. And so that those gaps in a lot of atheistic philosophy seem to be addressed by Aquinas' thoughts 1,000 years ago, right?
Absolutely.
Which is crazy.
I think the other thing that's so appealing about Aquinas is he doesn't shy away from his opponent's best arguments. He will present an argument, and then he will present the best arguments that he could conceivably come up with contrary to his argument. And these are things, you read the arguments and you go, oh man, I don't know how he's going to deal with this one. This seems like it's kind of a killer here. Gets it every time. So
you started with this Fazer's book on Aquinas' thought. And now I say Aquinas all the time. Sorry. It's because of you. You realize that. Like, yes. I mean, it was about a year ago that we had this discussion or somewhere in there. And so ever since then, I've said Aquinas instead of Aquinas. And so I've been like Catholicized or something, you know, in the meantime. But you fell in love with Fazer's description. So you've gone back and spent some time reading his Summa Theologica and his masterpieces.
Yeah, so the Summa is very tough to read, and I think that's why Fazer's so appealing to a lot of people. Is he kind of brings it down into layman's terms, and he describes it in a way that's
no, easy
to understand.
We cannot describe Fazer as layman's terms. Fazer definitely makes Aquinas more accessible, but Fazer is still like a pretty advanced level of, you know, discussion, even though he's just an introduction to Aquinas, which it says a lot about, you know, where Aquinas goes when he goes there, for sure.
I would say that you have to read, especially Aquinas' thought, and you know, commentators on Aquinas like Ballister McIntyre, Edward Fazer, you have to read them a little bit differently than you would read, you know, really anybody else. You have to, there were pages that I spent a week, 2 weeks on just sitting there and like, okay, man.
For
what is
one
this?
Page.
What is this? Sure, yeah, absolutely.
And what I find is I have to start like going word by word. Okay, I got to define that word. And you realize at the end of the day that that page is like half of the definition of one of the words, you know, like it really slows down and they're getting at very fine nuances between, you know, or shades of meaning between what it is that they're discussing. Mm-hmm. And so, all right, so can you summarize Aquinas' thought for us?
No. We don't have enough time.
And that's the end of the show.
I can give you
for coming today.
I can give you
it's
a little.
Really good to have you on.
Basic introduction to Thomism. The thing is, it's not one thought. It's not one argument specifically. The Summa is it's probably the biggest and most comprehensive.
Let me reframe it a little bit. When you first read the book that was kind of a primer, an introduction to Fazer. Thomas Aquinas, and you said it really kind of drew you into his thought and stuff. So this beginner's guide, what were one or two or three of the things that kind of struck you that made you interested? Like, huh, I didn't realize that Thomas Aquinas was responsible for that line of thinking in the church, or huh, I never knew that. Or can you remember any of those little aha insights or not really?
Yeah, I think the biggest one was... It's something that I'd always kind of know in the back of my head, but that truth was truth no matter where it came from. For Aquinas, he people say he baptized Aristotle into the Christian faith. He brought Aristotle's thought into the Christian faith, in much the same way that Augustine brought in Platonic thought from Plato and Socrates, much the same way that Alistair MacIntyre and Pierre Teilhard de Chardin brought in Marx into Christian thought. Thomas Merton later on brings Chuang Tzu, the Taoist philosopher, into a little bit of Christian thought, and there was something a little bit liberating, knowing that truth was truth.
And that's where you're saying that even your return to Christ was led there by C.S. Lewis, kind of shoring that up on your behalf, and so then this study of Aquinas. Aquinas was kind of along those same lines that truth is truth. Absolutely. And this whole this part of Aquinas' thought, now I'm going back the other way. I don't even know how to say it. Aquinas, that he really brought Aristotle kind of into, you know, church and church thinking is pretty important to kind of what he represents. And I think arguably is part of the reason why many of the reformers in the Protestant world had problems, you know, kind of with who he was and where, you know, like what he represents in the church. But I think we're planning to get to that, you know, in a couple of shows, so I don't want to, like, jump the gun on that.
Yeah, by the way, this is The Faith Debate on 930 WFMD. I'm Troy Skinner. The voice you heard right before mine is Jonathan Schweitzer, and the other voice you're hearing, and again, my apologies with a little bit of buzz every time you hear him speak, Hayden Booth. We'll see if we can't get that fixed at some point. Maybe it's not as bad to you, the listeners, as it is to me and my headphones. I don't know, but let's see if we can't place, just because we're trying to lay the foundation, the groundwork, and give a basic introduction to, you know, who Thomas Aquinas is and what impact his thought has had on the church. So let's look at a kind of historical arc. By the way, they go way, way back in the like way back machine. Pretend we have a DeLorean.
The way back machine.
And we're going to go back.
Dude, you're like fired up today.
Several thousand, years. There are those that argue that Plato and Aristotle and all those ancient Greek philosophers that have strongly influenced Western thinking, that they themselves were influenced by the people of God. And that that's how they came to these philosophical understandings of truth, is they were exposed to the truth from the people who God had exposed the truth to. So it's kind of interesting. If that's true, I don't know how we would trace that.
But that's a theory, right? That's not a...
There are books and people that try to make scholarly attempts to line that up and say this connects to that, and then they try to make a case. I don't think it's definitive. I mean, there's no extant paperwork from back then, right? There's nothing in existence that would help us.
Yeah.
But it is interesting to me if that's true.
Is it like the lost tribes of Israel or something somehow interacted with them or like...
I don't know some of the...
So now you've thrown it out there and I'm just going to have to let it go.
You have to look it up. Google it.
Yeah, I'll Google it.
Right?
Yeah,
you'll find the truth on Google. There's nothing wrong with a Google search. So But if that's true, let's just say for the sake of argument, it's kind of an interesting thing because you have this Grecian thought,
right,
introduced into the Christian thinking. But if what I just said is true, then you're just reintroducing into Christian thinking what was already there from the beginning, but maybe had been de-emphasized or ignored for a while or whatever. So it's just interesting. I think it echoes what Hayden was saying is truth is truth.
Yeah.
And all truth, everybody in the room is going to say, right, that all truth is God's truth and God reveals that truth. So if Aristotle had the truth, he got it from God somehow. Mm. Right, either a direct revelation or from God's people somehow. So I think it's an interesting thing.
Could it be argued that Aquinas is like the beginning of the Renaissance, like the beginning of the return to the classical thinkers?
And that's actually what I wanted to ask. So, are you capable of lining it up historically? You know, there's the early. Let's start with the early church. There's the early church, right? And then there's the persecution period, and we're all in hiding. A huge growth, though, and then Constantine comes along, makes it legal. The church is arguably a preferred religion for the Roman Empire.
That's right.
And then the history picks up rapidly. Like there's not a whole lot of Christian history those first 300-400 years.
Ambrose and then Augustine.
But then there's a bunch of history that happens. Now, are you able to kind of trace out where Aquinas kind of fits? I think I could, but I'm not sure I would do it as well as you could.
Sure. I can give him my best shot. I'm not a historian, but I can absolutely try. So, you know, we start out with the early church thinkers. We have Origen. We have Augustine in the 300s. Moving forward.
Augustine was 400s, 500s? Because the 300s was Constantine, right? Sorry, I just totally corrected you.
You are more than likely correct.
Okay, so keep going, though.
So,
and I'm not trying to get the date so much. I'm trying to get a feel for
the arc. The flow.
The flow, exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
So moving up from Augustine, we have, correct me if I'm wrong, Justin Martyr was maybe?
Justin Martyr was back with the early church fathers, and mm-hmm. so he was right after Origen. Mm-hmm. And Eusebius, those guys were all back then. So after Augustine, it seems like there was a couple monastic guys in between there before Aquinas. Yeah,
now what are Aquinas' dates?
1300s.
Yeah. So you have almost 1,000 years from, you know, Constantine and a couple of hundred years after that, it would be was it Confessions? Is that what the
City of God and Confessions?
City of God and Confessions.
Augustine, out. Yeah.
Yeah, with, or Augustine.
Yeah, there you go, messing with my vowels again. Aquinas, Augustine, Aquinas, and so, Augustine.
And so now we have some serious, long-standing thinking going on. And so I think you have like some intellectualizing entering the church at that point, right? I think that's a momentous happening.
Mm. But it's like the return of reason.
But then there's all this fighting that takes place. And so you have the Orthodox Church splits off from the Roman Church. And there's all this.
That was about 1,000 AD. About 300 years
exactly.
before.
And so then there's this split
Aquinas.
That takes place. And you have the Orthodox who become a little bit more attuned to like spiritual, mystical understanding of the scriptures, and they don't want to have the debates. And the Western Church, the Roman Church, is a little bit more getting into the nitty-gritty details of, well, what do we mean by that? How are we defining our terms? You have all these little, you know, they booked a lot of rooms at the area conference center, and they had these little confabs, and they'd get together, and they'd figure out what they thought, you know, they thought about things.
Yeah.
These councils, this is what I'm referring
yeah.
to. They'd have
yeah.
these councils.
You see that term.
And then you go into an area where the people aren't maybe learning what they should, not hearing what they should be hearing from the pulpit. And so we enter in kind of a dark period of understanding and of intellectual understanding and biblical understanding. And so then we ultimately end up entering into the scholastic period.
Yeah.
Which is almost like a hyper-intellectualizing and I think has its negatives. And I think Aquinas fits somewhere in that, right? Is he like a transitional figure for that?
He is
right?
More than, I would say, most people would think of him as probably the foremost scholastic thinker. Yeah.
Right. And so people that are critical of scholasticism are critical of Aquinas.
Generally.
Right? For a lot of the same reasons,
yeah,
aren't they?
Yeah. So that critique would sort of come in the form of, you know, Duns Scotus a little bit later on. Occam would be kind of a critique of,
and then you have the Reformation takes place a couple hundred years later, and then the church as we now know it in today's culture begins to take shape. You know, 500.
So what was the year that that Luther nails his 95 theses? Right,
15 something.
That's 15.
So 1517.
That's
right?
Like within 70 years of the rise of the printing press, Gutenberg's printing press. And so Aquinas was actually right during the time frame that was the bubonic plague time frame, because the bubonic plague was in the mid 1300s when that came through, and then that gave rise to the Gutenberg printing press, and then the Protestant Reformation was strengthened by the ability to print everything that he said and send it all over Europe.
And the reason I want to go through that history, I don't know if it's helpful or instructive or not, but if anybody's paying close attention and taking notes, there will be a quiz afterwards. I think it is helpful because I'm trying to figure out, where does Aquinas fit in the argumentation that takes place? And so he's late enough that he's not embraced by everybody in the church, because there's already the split with the Orthodox Church. Doesn't have some advantage with the earlier church fathers, for example.
Right.
And he's close enough to the Reformation, which happens just a couple of hundred years later, that he's maybe more closely aligned with not just Scholasticism, but also aligned with Roman Catholicism. And so the Protestants maybe don't give him as much weight. Right? Is that fair?
Sure. I would say that... there's definitely been something of a revival in Thomistic thought, in especially my church, Roman Catholic Church. But I would say you absolutely don't have to be a Catholic to, you know, respect Aquinas and even agree with what he has to say. I mean, I know plenty of Protestants who are very big readers of Aquinas, love his work.
Yeah, so I agree with that. Francis Schaeffer, I think, is a famous one in the last century that argued that Aquinas, like he summarized it, that Aquinas was the one that said, okay, there's the book of Revelation, but then there's the book of the world, and that you can find truth in both of those places. And so Schaeffer kind of looks back to Aquinas as a key point where there is an allowed competition, I think is the way that Schaeffer would put it, for truth, that in Aquinas was a profound unity, like he synthesized those things very effectively, but that it was the guys that came after Aquinas that didn't do as good a job at synthesizing them. And so then the result was that people that cared about the Bible over the next like 400 years or so split off from those that cared about the book of creation, the book of science. And so that was kind of the birth of these two competing approaches to discovering the truth. And like you're saying, yes, it's true that there's truth in science and things to discover, but that's where things got muddled and where most of the Protestants' discomfort with it arose, is that they felt like there was a need to return to the Bible. And so the Catholic intention or commitment to not shut down the study of reason and the use of reason kind of kept that alive in those circles. Is that accurate?
Well, we'll find out if it's accurate next week. This is the Faith Debate. Not a whole lot of debating going on this week because we're laying the groundwork, but there'll maybe be some debating on next week's show. By the way, happy belated Thanksgiving to our Canadian friends, and and a happy belated Columbus Day to all of our American friends.
Yeah, and we're allowed to celebrate that still?
Not really.
Sorry,
I apologize. Yes. I just offended, you know, a whole bunch of people.
Yes.
Anyway, Jonathan Schweitzer, he is the founder of Bridges. You have a Facebook page and website and stuff now, right? I think so. You can go online, Google Bridges Frederick John Schweitzer, and you'll see what's going on with that. And Hayden Booth, a layman of the Roman Catholic Church, and a Thomas, we'll continue to hash that out between this week and next week. I'm Troy Skinner. You can visit us online at WFMD.com, keyword faith. You'll see a rundown of all the shows that are coming up in coming weeks, and be able to link to podcasts of this show and other shows if you care to do so. Until next week, thanks so much for listening. God bless.